The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. All right, you guys probably heard I did my very first DDPY workout with Dallas a couple weeks ago, and I was blown away with how much I liked it and the way it made me feel. And I made a commitment to stick with this program for a couple of months, and I'm still going strong. I've been doing my regular workouts with the DDP Yoga Now app, and I can really feel a difference starting to break up some of that scar tissue. And if you don't believe me, just check out this list of folks DDP has helped out with this program. Scott Hall, Goldust, Chris Jericho, Edge, Jake Roberts, AJ Styles, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Fish, Tony Schiavone, and Podcast One's own Chael Sonnen. Dallas is so positive that you'll absolutely love the DDPY program and using the DDPY app. He's doing something he ain't never done before. He's going to give you 7 days free to try it out. Listen to me. That's a week to try the program, explore the app, and own your life, and it's completely free. And you're going to need a week because that's how much content is on this app in the way of workouts, motivation, nutrition, everything. Make DDP your own and get results. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, all weights, all fitness levels. It is a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before. And this is all done with minimal joint impact. That's why I dig it. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app, which now features DDPY Rebuild. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. Also, Dallas will be in Raleigh, North Carolina, July 23rd and July 24th for the Raleigh Supercon. He'll be there signing autographs and taking pictures both days. So go ahead and start planning to attend the biggest DDPY workshop ever, happening September 1st at StarCast in Chicago, Illinois. People get mad when I call it Illinois. I know it's actually pronounced Illinois. Tickets for the workshop are on sale now. Get more details at ddpyogaworkshops.com. And that's the bottom line.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. Sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street, about to open up a can of audio whoop ass, and I think you'll enjoy today's show. I'm sitting at my 4x4 podcast table, got my microphone going, Zoom H6N recorder going, got my laptop computer on the table. I just got finished watching a documentary, and the documentary was called Please Don't Die, Joey Janela. It's a short documentary made by Kenny Johnson. It's about 38 minutes long. Joey Janela came by the house yesterday, and he was sitting right across the table from me. And I did a lot of research on Joey. I watched a lot of his matches, but I just got finished watching the documentary. And really had an interesting conversation with this young man. And turns out, yours truly was a big influence as far as, you know, him growing up back in the day over there in the Jersey area. Grew up a big wrestling fan. Big Hogan fan, big Ultimate Warrior fan, Stone Cold fan, Rock, you know, the list goes on and on. Sabu, all those guys. He's a big ECW fan. I got hooked up with this guy. He came by the crib, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And I just got finished watching this documentary, which I will recommend that you watch after the podcast. I'll tell you what, man, this guy, good kid, real nice kid. Man, he does some crazy stuff. Some of the damnedest bumps I've ever seen in my life. Bottom line, period. He's a big fan of the Japanese death matches and obviously was influenced some by Mick Foley, Terry Funk, as you'll hear in the podcast. But I just got finished watching this documentary, and I tell you what, he's 29 years old as I speak right now, and he's made a name for himself. Now, he's not everybody's cup of tea. Obviously, you know, Jim Cornette's not a big fan. I just got a chance to watch some of his work. I just got finished watching John Zandig and Joey at the Tournament of Survival in 2016, where they took the damnedest bump I'd ever seen off of a building into the back of a pickup truck, and John Zandig broke his back in three places during that bump. Joey almost cut off his left thumb. They were able to save it, and he's got some movement out of it, so he came out okay on it. But when you watch that bump, it is so extreme. It's disturbing. And watching some of the highlights from the ladder match he had with Leo Rush, the bump off the beam hanging from the roof, the ceiling. I tell you what, the guy's not afraid to take any kind of bumps that there is in the world. When you watch some of this stuff, and I'll recommend it at the end of the podcast again, do not try this at home. It's not for everybody. I was amazed by the match between him and John Zandig, and I really enjoyed the match with him and Leo Rush for what they are. You know, they're those extreme, you know, death-type matches. You know, I was a brawler, more of a scientific wrestler in my day, but everybody goes down the road they go, and Joey is going down this hardcore road, and he also has some entertaining matches with an invisible man. I watched a couple of those matches, and we'll talk about those on a podcast, but interesting guy and a good kid, and I enjoyed my conversation with him, and I sent him down the road with the Broken Skull IPA, and I hope he enjoyed it. And listen to this podcast and then watch a couple of the videos that I'll recommend for you in the close. I'm going to keep this open short because me and Joey talk for about an hour and a half, about an hour and 40 minutes. We'll see how long it ends up being. But if you're watching some of these matches, don't try none of this stuff at home. It's extremely dangerous, and Joey has been very fortunate to not be seriously injured and doing these things. And, man, you only got so many bump cards, and I wish Joey all the best. I had a great time talking to him. He's welcome to come back on a podcast anytime he's on the mean streets of Los Angeles. And without any further ado, I'll give you the matches and things to watch after the podcast. But enjoy my conversation with the one and only Joey Janela. I enjoyed talking to him. I've enjoyed watching his matches. The extreme deathmatch style is not everybody's cup of tea, but this is one guy who's been able to, he's got to have nine lives because some of the things that he's done just looks like it just should have killed him. But he's had a lot of notoriety coming out of this, some positive, some very negative. So he's a very polarizing young man in the wrestling business. He certainly elicits a strong response either way. I wish him all the luck in the world. I wish him safe land and safe travels and continued success in his pro wrestling career as he goes down the road to his next endeavor. Coming up, my conversation with Joey Janela. But before we get to Joey, take a moment to think about your underwear. If the underwear you have on right now does not make you feel like the baddest SOB on the planet, then hear me out about MeUndies. MeUndies are made with a material sustainably sourced from beechwood trees. Their naturally soft fiber makes a fabric that won't sag down or ride up. With MeUndies, you can get undies sent right to your door. No more hunting around for the perfect pair at a crowded store. And MeUndies is so sure you'll love your first pair that if you're not happy, they'll do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them, and they'll refund you. So it really is risk-free to try the best underwear ever. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you get 15% off your first pair of MeUndies and free shipping. That's right. Just go to MeUndies.com/Steve for your 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. In fact, since they're so generous, here's an extra gift for you. Order a pair, take a screenshot of your transaction, and send it to Podcast One, and they'll send you another pair. You get one for 15% off and then another pair from Podcast One. The first 25 people to send a proof of purchase, a screenshot of your purchase, or the receipt, they'll send you another pair free. Just send your proof to gift@podcastone.com, put Steve in the subject line, and you will soon have another pair in your collection. Again, that's gift@podcastone.com. One more time. MeUndies.com/Steve. Check it out.
Shut it down.
Hi, I'm John Taffer. You probably know me because I've rescued thousands of bars, hundreds of them on TV.
That's your future broken.
I'm also a best-selling author, and I've owned and operated a bunch of other businesses. But now I'm here on Podcast One with my new show, No Excuses.
I only yell at assholes.
Every Tuesday, I'm going to give it to you straight. I'm giving you all things bar rescue, insider peeks of what's going on the set, current events and topics you care about, with in-your-face analysis, and you know how straight I can be. And I'm going to have unforgettable guest interviews with the world's most interesting people, and I'm going to ask them the questions that nobody else has ever asked them. And yes, sometimes I can be a bit of an ass, but I'm going to shut it down every Tuesday and make no excuses. It's going to be the number one show here on Podcast One. Listen to it every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, on the Podcast One app, and on Apple Podcasts. And remember, rate and review it, or I'm going to shut you down.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, it's in here, 317 Gimmick Street with Joey Janela. Just stepped into town, had a show come over. Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Man, I didn't know you knew Court Beyer. He sent me a text message a while ago. Hey, man, I heard you have one of my guys over from MLW. I said, man, you know this guy?
Yeah, I told him the other day, and he was
He was real excited that I was coming on this show and said you guys are great friends from way back.
Yeah, we talk on the phone all the time. I'm always trying to rebook the territory and make the ship sail straight ahead. But anyway, that's a whole other story for a whole other day. This is a real interesting story because right before my producer reached out and said, hey, man, what about having Joey Janela on a podcast? I had seen one of those GIFs, memes, whatever the hell it's called, and it was that famous bump from the Tournament of Survival in 2016. And John Zandig, y'all went to the top of the building. Yes. after the most crazy, violent shit inside the ring, y'all spilled outside, and then you were climbing up that damn ladder. He goes, picks you up, and y'all go through the pickup truck. And I just explained it in about 15 seconds. But we can start all over the place. And I know you don't really have any classic wrestling training. Where do you want to start from? Because, I mean, did that bump kind of put you on the map? I mean, because it'd been a long road in the making.
Yeah, it definitely put me on the map. If you want to start from the beginning, we can. I basically was an untrained professional wrestler. Much love for the business. I knew a guy. He was a backyard wrestler. He also, at the same time, was a professional wrestler. His name was Dirtbag Dan. I said, how do I get in the business? He said, come set up a ring with me. And it just went from there. I just started lying to promoters and telling them I was a trained wrestler, and I wasn't. And I just kind of learned on the road. And the older – this is when I was 15, 16 years old. So the older I got, the wiser I got, and started going to seminars, camps, training schools. I've been to over 60 seminars and wrestling camps. So I've been to many wrestling schools.
So when you go to those were instructional or learning. Any psychology stuff? Was it in-ring work? I mean, because dude, you can work your ass off, but I mean, you're also an extreme daredevil, if I may call you that. calculated risk, as you say. Read a very interesting article about you on ESPN. So when you get into the business and you don't have any training, dude, how were you able to fake these promoters out?
Jersey's a real carny place when it comes to independent professional wrestling. And things were a lot different when I broke in. It was about 2005, 2006. And there was a lot of carny wrestling promotions that would just use local guys and then bring in a name or two, bring in whoever was released or the Tito Santanas or the Greg the Hammers. Things have changed. But the promoter was just like, hey, you want to wrestle? All you got to do is sell a few tickets. Here's 10 tickets. Basically, they do the same thing with rock bands when they first start out. Sell 10 tickets and we'll put you on the show. And that's basically how I got my start. I guess I knew enough to get through. It wasn't good at all. But just learning from camps and seminars that got me through. I've done camps and seminars from everyone from Gerald Briscoe to AJ Styles to Ultimo Dragon to Matt Hardy, Billy Gunn, Dusty Rhodes, Dean Malenko, the list goes on. I've done over 50. So basically that's really where I grasped. Sometimes, seminars and camps aren't the best, but I've always picked one thing out of each seminar and camp, and I've kept it with me for my run right now.
Man, when you first started, what was your style or how did it evolve into what you're doing now?
It was actually similar. I was just a lot more athletic. I feel like maybe I kind of blew my load too early. I used to be very athletic, and if I had the athletic prowess that I did then, that I did now, it'd be a whole different ball game. So now I'm kind of I'm not saying I'm beat up. I've only had one injury in 12 years. So from that roof deal, so it kind of evolved into more character. Just learning how to connect with a crowd. And that's something I'm very good at, I feel, is just connecting with crowds. I feel like that's the most important thing.
I didn't know what to expect when you rolled in here, because I was thinking, okay, I'm looking at Joey Janela, the guy who wrestles, in character. You're pretty reserved.
Yeah.
Not in the ring. Well, I guess probably I can say the same about myself. I'm not sitting there yelling at you and cussing at you and bullshit like that. But
yeah.
Tell me about this in-ring guy that you are.
My persona basically is something that evolved throughout the years. It's kind of based off who I was as a teen, rebellious, get arrested by cops. It's an extension of me. And some people compare it to an 80s prick, just bad boy from the 80s movies. And I do a lot of experimenting, and right now what I am, it works, and there's no reason to change it. I'm always trying to evolve my character and who I am, and you know, I think that's, you know, that's why in the last couple of years my stock has risen on the independents.
You said you got kicked out of high school.
Yeah.
What happened there? What kind of student were you?
I was bad. I have severe ADD. That was an issue. When I was 10 years old, my father passed away in a construction accident. And that kind of really fucked with me because he wasn't sick or anything. He's a healthy 39-year-old guy, and a compressor fell and killed him. So just being a kid who lost his father so suddenly, I wasn't a good kid before he passed, but that really, you know, and my mom, she had to raise three kids now. You know, it's hard to raise three kids when you're a single mother. You know, I had no one to discipline me. I didn't do really bad things, but I would get into fights and just go places and cause issues that the cops come and arrest me, and then the problem would further with the cops. And high school, it was every day my mom was getting calls to come pick me up, and suspensions and detentions, and I had probably the biggest detention list at the time for that high school in the history of that high school. So they kicked me out and sent me to an alternative school with gang members and people that kicked out for drugs or bringing a weapon to school. So it was quite the experience. And I feel like that really did, you know, help me. I feel like getting kicked out of high school and getting sent to an alternative school, and at the same time at breaking in the wrestling business, I feel like that really gave me an outlet to straighten myself out and have something to work towards.
Did you do any time in jail?
No, I almost did. I was on probation a few times, and I broke probation a few times, had to go to court. There was a chance I could have went to juvenile jail because I was on probation, and then I had another thing where I did a simple assault to somebody. But I've been to the scared straight thing, you know, that, yeah, it could have gotten worse, but it didn't. And I thank professional wrestling a lot because of that.
When you were, you're just 29 now, and so when did you start watching the business?
1991.
Okay.
Hogan, Warrior. Then I stopped watching for a little bit, and I got real back into it. WCW, when the Cruiserweights, Ultimo Dragon and Mysterio and Jericho, I got into it, and then you. you're the reason I'm a professional wrestler today. During that time when my father passed, you were my idol. I mean, my dad, before he passed, shaved his head. He had a goatee to say, my dad looks like Stone Cold. And I made him put a 316 bumper sticker on his work, man. And, you know, I thank you for that. And you helped me get through a lot of bad times.
That's interesting. I'm sorry to hear about that terrible tragedy. But I've heard similar stories every now and then from people. I'll get an email, and it's very flattering to be able to do that for someone or get them through hard times or whatever. So, yeah.
This was 1999, so
yeah.
this is you were on top of the business, and that's all. I was like, man, one day I want to be like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Basically, you were a heavy influence on my gimmick today, and just playing a rebel for a new crowd.
But it's almost like there was a real nice article about you on ESPN, and I guess you were talking with respect to your character. It's kind of, you know, you turned up, which me being Stone Cold was just me being turned up. There's not so much a gimmick, or whether it's a everyman or anti-authority or whatever situation or circumstance the character was placed in. I'm just being me turned up, and it seems to be the same with you.
Yeah. A lot of people in 2018, they're walking on eggshells. I feel like,
the
business has changed. So a lot of people are scared who's going to watch them do something wrong. I've always just stuck to my instincts and not afraid to express myself in this day and age.
When did you get into all of the high-risk stuff that you've evolved into, you know, over the years? Because, you know, I can see that you can work. I can see that you have timing. And I can see the way a crowd identifies with you and you to that crowd. And you can move people. So with basic storytelling. So, man, when did you start incorporating all the high-stakes stuff, high-risk stuff?
Probably since the beginning, because I was always an ECW, big ECW fan. When I got back into wrestling, though, you know, 97, that big boom period, ECW was huge, and it was local. It was in Philadelphia, these guys are. So after ECW closed down, CZW came along, and that was just a different level of chaos. And then I found FMW and all the Japanese craziness. So from the beginning, that's what I was into. You know, when Ring of Honor, when Danielson was on top of Ring of Honor, I wasn't really into that. I found that boring. Now I love that stuff, but back then I found it boring. I wanted to see people fall off trucks through flaming tables, and I wanted to see people hit each other with light tubes and destroy each other's lives. You know, it's just something I've always wanted. That's the style I was into growing up, so why not embrace it? And people say, why do you do these bumps? And I just say, I love it. This is what I grew up watching, and I'm going to incorporate, you know, what I love into my act.
I'm paraphrasing you, but basically you said, you know, this is a style that got me to where I am right now. My question to you is, if this is a style that got you to where you're at right now, and you're, you know, on top of the indie scene, you're everywhere, you're working about 4 days a week, you had a great show at WrestleMania 34 weekend. Yeah. That was your Joe Geno spring break, and which was highly successful, basically a sellout. But where do you want to go in the business? Because it's not necessarily like you say, hey, man, WWE is my destination point. And I don't think really that's the case with you. So, or is it? And where do you want to go?
WWE, that is my main goal. You know, I still do the craziness. I do the spots, but it's controlled chaos. I know I can protect myself. My track record kind of speaks for itself because I'm doing these crazy bumps, and I've only been injured once off the roof bump. I've injured my thumb. So I'm not saying my body's not breaking down, and I'm not going to feel it when I'm 40, but guys that just do a technical wrestling style their bodies are shot. It's controlled chaos and kind of like a stuntman sometimes. And I know how to, you know, brace myself for these big bumps I take. But I've definitely toned down my style in the last couple of years and gone a more direction to character base and connecting with the crowd because I feel like that's what's going to make my money.
So are you basically working, would you call your style or where you're at right now, heel or baby or just that bad boy?
It's a bad boy. That's just
however they take you.
Yeah. Sometimes like I'll go somewhere, if I go wrestle in England, they'll boo me. But now it's kind of like since Twitter, it's kind of a universal thing that I'm a big baby face, but I wrestle like a heel sometimes. So, I guess I'm just the bad boy. There's no heel, there's no face, I'm a bad boy. But sometimes if I'm wrestling a girl or I'm wrestling a super baby face, I'll turn up the heel antics and I'll get booed. But at the end of the night, they're always cheering for me. It's kind of strange, but I guess in 2018, this day and age, it works.
A lot of the stuff I saw on YouTube was it Penelope Ford?
Yeah.
I mean, she's done some pretty wicked bumps and the fray. Is she a friend of yours? Are y'all an item? Or I'm like, do you see each other at shows? Or how does that all work out?
She was Drew Gulak's student. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Drew Gulak was helping me get to where I'm at right now, helping me tidying up my skills. When I was working for CZW, he was the trainer there. And I met her. There was a program called Dojo Wars. It's a Wednesday student show every week. And it would just be the students versus trained wrestlers. And I would just do it to sharpen up my skills. I did it for 2 years straight. It definitely helped me get me to where I am right now. She was just breaking into business. So he stuck us with each other. And every week he'd have us wrestle. He had us wrestle 12 times. And by the end of that, we were a couple. We were in a relationship. But now it's 5 years later, almost. We're still together. She's raising her stock a lot. She's trying to tone down herself too because she's a very beautiful woman, and she there's no reason she should be taking those kinds of risks. It's just now we're a couple and we've been there for 5 years. We just hopefully it just works out in the end.
You're a 12-year veteran. It's a crazy ass business. You're in Jersey. Where's she at in Jersey?
She's in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah, Philadelphia. She's a Philly girl, right outside of Philly in one of the suburbs. It's not too far of a drive, an hour and a half. But we travel together on the road a lot now, and, you know, she's getting herself over. I didn't get her over. She got herself over, so now she's getting brought to more promotions on her own, and she's getting brought to more promotions with me. So it just works out now, and we get to see each other very often.
How do people find you for booking and stuff like that? And I know you're on Twitter, Janella, baby.
Twitter, usually just DM or you know, I think I have my email on there. People just hit me up. It's so weird now. People hit you up on Instagram, hit you up on Twitter in the DMs, Facebook. Like, I just got hit up by a promoter. Hey, you want to come wrestle in Australia? Through an Instagram direct message. It's just wild, wild west these days.
Some of the stuff I've seen on you on YouTube, I've been watching for a couple of hours. And there's a best of Joey Janela. Just some of the things that you've come up with. Dude, I used to ride down the road and we were drinking beer. And this is after, you know, I was paying my dues. And there was a shit pile of us in the car because nobody's making any money. But finally, I started making a little bit of money. I was riding solo, just drinking beer, man. I just had a fanny pack. And if I saw a billboard or something like that that inspired a T-shirt idea, you know, I'd write it down. Or if I thought of something cool to say, you know, I'd write it down so I wouldn't forget it. As you're riding down the road or doing whatever you're doing, you know, how do you come up with some of the things you do? Because, like, right now, as we're talking, I'm sitting there watching you versus Leo Rush. And it was, I know you probably worked with him several times, but this is the one where you're hanging from the rafters of the damn building. And then he had fallen off the ladder onto the two tables, I guess.
It was two ladders on the guardrail.
Yeah.
And then there was a larger ladder and I grabbed the beams of the building. That was just a spur of the moment thing.
Tell me about that spur of the moment thing. Did Leo know what's coming?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't that spur of the moment. It was before the show and I said, me and Leo, we wrestled like five times. We were in like a 2-year rivalry.
A lot of chemistry there.
Yeah, so we were just like, hey, Leo, what if you lay on this ladder and then I climb this big ladder and then I hang from this beam and drop an elbow drop? And he's like, yeah, sure, he trusts me. But when I got up there, when I actually slipped, my hands were sweaty and I climbed too and I slipped off. And it just so happened that I landed perfectly and I didn't even touch him. If you watch a video in slow motion, we don't even make any contact. So it just worked out perfectly and I was fine from that, but I slipped. That could have ended worse than the roof bump, I think.
Right.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
When you were working with Zandig on the roof bump match, you wanted him to throw you off the building.
Yeah.
Had he done that before?
Yeah, he did that to Sick Nick Mondo in 2002.
That's right. I heard about that.
And that was like that was a big thing for me because, you know, with when Kazaa and LimeWire, those music sharing, they also had wrestling video sharing, and you'd look up video clips and that would be one of the clips. And you're like, whoa, what is going on here? This is a different level. You know, and I'm a teenager and bloodthirsty. You know, I was like, wow, this is what I want to watch. So it's just been a thing over the years. I wanted to do that bump. I didn't do it for anyone. I did it for myself. If I had a time machine to go back in time, I wouldn't change a thing, but I wouldn't do anything like that again. It's once in a lifetime. Even Foley said that is the craziest bump he's ever seen in his life. And for him to say that is something.
Dude, I would have to agree with him because I don't think I've seen every bump in the history of wrestling, but the ones that I have seen, I've seen some crazy backyard shit that's just, you know, bullshit, yeah. But I ain't never seen nothing like it. Was Nick a big influence on you or him and Terry Funk? Well, you know, along with both those guys working with each other, they're both going back and forth to Japan doing those death matches. Were they an influence?
Big influence. I actually started going to indie shows in 1998. Dennis Carluzzo, NWA Jersey. They ran many shows in my area. And when I would go to those shows, it'd be VHS tapes. And then I'd go and I'd look through and it'd be King of the Death Matches 95, the famed one, the Kawasaki Dream, and Best of Barbed Wire. And I was like, oh, wow. Cactus Jack, you know, Terry Funk. These are people I knew from watching WWF. They were doing the whole Chainsaw Charlie deal. I wasn't really a big Terry Funk guy before that, but I knew who they were through WWF and some ECW tapes. It kind of changed my life. I watched those tapes, and then I'd go in my backyard, climb the playground, and jump off, drop an elbow, and onto nothing on a stuffed animal. And those guys, Terry Funk and Cactus Jack, those are two guys that really changed things for me as well, and the way I looked at professional wrestling, because these guys were big superstars on TV, and then I'm watching the tape, and they're blowing each other up with C4 bombs, getting thrown into barbed wire, and it was just wow, I was blown away, and it was something like I've never seen before, and it definitely influenced me big and influenced my brain to what I liked to watch professional wrestling wise.
I never forget me and Mick Foley got a chance to meet. I was just breaking into business at Dallas, Texas at the Sportatorium. And he saw me down there running the ropes during the wrestling school. And I guess Mick had probably been in business a couple years before me. Of course, I was, you know, sticking around watching the matches and watching Mick work. And, you know, he was having really good matches. And I've always liked Mick's work, but he was doing this thing where they'd build him off the apron onto that. Wow. It was a wooden floor. That's the hardest wooden floor yeah. I've ever been on in my life. It might as well have been double concrete. And you say, what is double concrete? I don't know. I just invented it. That's how hard that damn floor was. And Jack would just thud off that thing and just slide. And we both ended up in WCW and both ended up at the Big Show. And, you know, he had the career that he had. He's in the Hall of Fame. And you know, it's funny because Mick is one of the smartest guys in the business. He's one of the cheapest guys in the business. And I'm in like the same category with him. We're very frugal. But he beat to shreds. Do you, like you said, you're 29. You think maybe you're going to feel this when you're 40. I'm sitting across from you. I'm 53. I feel pretty decent. But, you know, I was only in a couple of train wrecks. Yeah. Are you thinking about that? I'm sure you've seen Mick. It's not like he's just running up and down everywhere.
I know the day's going to come where it's going to happen, you know. But it's just, I kind of live for the moment. I live for now. You know, I'm living my dream right now. I know I've gotten this far from untrained backyard wrestler to wrestling every major independent wrestling promotion in here and going over to England for a weekend and wrestling for Progress. Like most people that pay $3,000 for a wrestling school, some of these people don't even get that opportunity. And me, you know, I got that opportunity to get where I'm at. It was a long road, but that's why I just live for the moment and I do what I enjoy to do because it's my thank you to the fans for helping me get to where I'm at right now.
You know, I never took the bumps that you did, but I had, just as me being the grizzled vet, explained to you, you know, what's going to happen. And you're a very smart guy. You know this. But it's like the old-timers, Gorgeous Gary Young and the guys that were really instrumental in a Scandal Akbar, Bronco Lubitsch, and all of the guys. You know, God dang, Steve, you only got a couple. You only got so many bumps on your bump ticket. So, but you know what's coming.
Yeah, I know what's coming, you know. There's never a time where I go, oh, I can't get out of bed today.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. People, how do you get through your days doing these matches every weekend? I feel great. I feel fine. My knees are a little messed up, but someone that's not doing these bumps, knees are messed up. Or sometimes my lower back hurts. It's not excruciating pain, but someone that's not doing these bumps is in excruciating pain from professional wrestling. And, you know, I think the day is going to come for everyone if you stick in wrestling long enough, you're going to have surgeries. You're going to be beat up. It's just the nature of the business. When that day comes, I'll handle that then. But right now, I'm just enjoying it.
And that's the exact mentality I had. Hey, man, you're living your dream. You're having your moment and you're present. You can't be thinking about the future because I remember when the guys would tell me that. And like I said, I wasn't working, you know, your style, but I was a very aggressive style. And it's like, you know, I appreciate the information, but it's like, yeah, this is, I'm doing my shit.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many guys tell me, don't do this or don't do that. And I'm like, why do you do this? And it's, I enjoy this. I'm living my dream. No one's going to tell me, you know, when to tone down. I'll know when I should tone down my stuff. And I've had toned down my stuff since that roof up. I take crazy stuff, but it's kind of controlled chaos. And I know what the outcome's going to be, and I'm not going to be too beat up.
Hey, man, as much out of all the, you know, crazy matches that you've had, I mean, with respect to bumps and barbed wire and light bulbs and the heights and ladders, not a whole lot of blade jobs.
No, I've only done three.
Yeah.
I've only done about five death matches, as they say. But the thing off the roof, when that blew up, people just thought I was a deathmatch wrestler. A lot of guys, they actually compare me to an ECW wrestler. That's my style. I can kind of do technical. I can do wrestling. I can do the craziness. Like Sabu in the 90s. That guy can do it all. That's what a lot of guys, they're like, you're like an ECW guy. I'm not really a deathmatch guy. I don't like getting cut. I don't like getting scarred. But I like do I do enjoy that culture of that hardcore style of professional wrestling. But I haven't really bladed too much. I have no gig marks on my head, and I think it's just that's what people think I am because that's what they see on the internet.
If you do start blading, Joey, keep going horizontal. Don't go vertical. You're a good-looking kid.
I think I just did a little poke. That's it.
Yeah. Tell me about your tolerance for pain. Because I always, I have a high tolerance for pain, just the way it is. Some of the situations I've seen you in, especially that bump off the building in the back of that truck, and dude, that was damn near suicide. And as we were talking before we started rolling, that truck was too close. He had to go feet first.
Yeah.
You know, and you damn near hit that bar on that. It was a work truck.
Yeah.
And so landing amidst all that shit, and he broke his back in a couple places.
He's yeah, three spots.
And you damn near got your thumb cut off just because of the barbed wire.
Yeah.
But explain to me what was going through your mind as he picked you up, and it was that come to Jesus moment where it's like, okay, we're going, ain't no turning back.
I just closed my eyes. I closed my eyes. The thing was, I closed my eyes, and when I landed, I was like, okay, I'm good. I didn't realize my thumb was so mangled yet. I'm like, okay, I'm good. That was a little crazy. But as we landed in the truck, all the light tubes flew in the air, and I opened my eyes, and they all came crashing down. And that's when I had a mouthful of glass. It was like being in like a war movie. Like, oh, like something just, it was wild. But as soon as the dust cleared, I realized my thumb was hanging off. I was like, well, got to go to the hospital. Got to get that stitched up. But I wasn't in pain or anything. The bump, the initial bump was fine. I didn't hit my head. I didn't see stars. It was just a high impact bump. And he owns a construction company. So he knew the spring from the truck would protect us kind of like a trampoline. And he was correct. I don't know why there was barbed wire at the bottom of the truck for no one to see, but that's what cut my finger. And, I'm happy he protected me throughout that. And he took the risk for himself because I think he has five kids. He's in his 50s now, but he has five kids and he walks with a cane and can't really take care of them anymore. So
what's he doing to pay the bills?
He still owns a construction company. I guess he just sits at home.
You're in L.A. Last night you was working for a bar wrestling with Joey Ryan. What'd you do?
I was actually supposed to be in a show in Florida, but I had flight issues. So I called Joey Ryan. I said, you're running a show tonight? And he said, yeah, why? I said, well, my flight fell through to Florida. Is there any way you have any spots open? He goes, sure. He goes, where are you? I said, I'm at the airport. And Joey goes, oh, I'm at the airport too. And he goes, I'll pick you up in 2 minutes. He was just getting off a flight. And he picked me up, brought me to his house, and put me on the show, and it was very nice of him for somebody, you know, just to throw money at me like that last minute. But yeah, it was a great show.
That'd be a good surprise for the crowd.
Yeah, it was good. A few fans saw me before because he runs in this little small VFW hall in Baldwin Park, and so I had to make a run to 7-Eleven, and I didn't want to sit. It was hot. It was hot as piss in there. Oh, in this building, there was no air condition, no nothing. So everyone was calling their match in the parking lot, and I didn't really want to go out of the parking lot because fans get to go in and out. So a few fans saw me, but when I came out, they definitely went a little wild. I was in Cali the night before for PWG, so it's mainly the same fan base.
Right.
But still, to get a pop like that, like I was just coming back off an injury or something. It was pretty cool.
You live and die off those pops, man.
That's it. I think that's what keeps me living. This is pops.
You got a match tonight as we speak. This is going to be a few days later. But you got a match tonight where there's not a ring involved, but there's some punk rock bands playing, and you guys are going to kind of work in between songs or like in an intermission, or how's that work?
I think there's probably like three bands, and then they have three matches. It's like a band match, band match, band match. So it's just kind of in a bar. I think it's going to sell out. They usually do sell out, so it's kind of like a fight club. They kind of make a human ring, human circle, and it's kind of like a movie scene where we just fight in the circle of people, you know. I've done one in New York City, and it's quite the experience because you're trying to think of ways how to work this match without taking a brain buster on the concrete floor. But, it's something new. It's something different, and the only place this can happen is in 2018 in professional wrestling, because this year and last year has just been so wild that now you can have a show with no ring and draw draw 300 people, and the wrestlers are down with it.
Oh, what's your reason, or help me out with why the indie scene in 2018, and obviously it's been building, but as we speak, it's 2018. Man, how hot the indie business is.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of the wrestlers now that are coming up were fans of all the different styles of the mid-2000s indies, that Ring of Honor style, or you had that Combat Zone style, or you had Noah in Japan. And I feel like that's all of us, that's what we grew up watching. So I feel like we're kind of all just a product of what that was, the late 90s to mid-2000s, and we're just kind of a mix. And I feel like it's just, we all have a lot of passion for the business now that it really shows. And every place I go is sold out or nearly sold out, from here, England, Canada. It's just, when I started in 2005, it was wrestling in front of five people. It was wrestling in front of 30 people a week. And I was like, wow, great crowd, great house tonight. There's 40 people here. It's just, I think maybe wrestling was due for another boom period, and we're on the verge of that right now. And it's just wild with everything, and WWE working with people and New Japan working with people. And I feel like there's legit competition now, maybe. And maybe that's it. Maybe the indies is maybe kind of like the territories, and now there's a competition with New Japan and Ring of Honor and WWE. You can't really deny that there's no competition there, because they announced that they're running Madison Square Garden, and that's never happened.
How is the atmosphere backstage at some of the indie shows that you're running now? I mean, the level of brotherhood, or is it everybody's pretty tight, or are you guys so competitive because everybody's kicking, scratching, clawing to try to be the top guy? I mean, what is the community on the indie scene?
Everyone's pretty cool with each other. Most of the guys I wrestle with now, we're all pretty successful. All the guys that are traveling city to city, I see Matt Riddle 5 times a month. I see Jeff Cobb 4 times a month. I see Pentagon in Phoenix every couple weeks. It's kind of, I feel like we're all successful in our own right, and we're all selling our own merch, and we're all making money. And now there's a clear light at the end of the tunnel, but in the 2000s there wasn't, because there was none of this. Like, kind of CM Punk and Danielson kind of opened up the doors for guys like us. There was really no light at the tunnel for indie guys then. Now there's a clear light at the end of the tunnel, guys. It's like every week, it's like Toy Story, when the claw machine is coming and they're grabbing the aliens, and yeah, the claw, it's coming. I feel like every week someone's getting picked up by the claw and going to the WWE or going to New Japan and making money. It's just a ridiculous thing that, all right, there's a goal now that we can work towards. It's not as hard as it was for the guys before me, and I thank them for that, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I hope it works out.
Brought up Pentagon. He's one of my favorite wrestlers going right now. I got a chance to meet him in Phoenix, who I like as well, over there in Orlando, WrestleMania 34, when we was doing some signings. We were talking about, because Vampiro was on the podcast. Oh. Vampiro had said that Pentagon was chubby or heavy set. We were laughing about that, but I enjoyed the match with Zandig that I just got finished watching. I mean, it was brutal. It was violent. It's not something I would ever do, but I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that damn match that Pentagon and Vampiro had about a year and a half ago, Lucha Underground. Did you see that?
Yeah, I seen that. That was probably, I don't really watch too much wrestling, because I watch so much wrestling when I'm on the road, because I'm always trying to watch whatever show I'm on. If I'm up early, I'll go out, I'll have a beer, and I'll watch the show with the crowd. So I don't really get to watch Lucha Underground or TNA or whatnot, but I did see that match, and it was for TV. It was pretty brutal, and I think that's really the match that put Pentagon on the map for sure. I think 100%. I don't think there's any denying that.
What is your favorite match of all time that you've seen or that you've been a part of, or something that just really resonated and made you feel something?
There's so many matches that influenced me. It's hard to pinpoint just one.
Yeah. Let's don't focus on a one, but just what were some of those instances or moments that influenced you?
Great Sasuke versus Anita from Japan. They did an exploding no ropes barbed wire match. And the way Onita and Sasuke sold that match, I didn't know who these guys were when I got the VHS tape. I would go around the neighborhood and I'd show all the kids in the neighborhood this tape. I said, you got to see this match. These guys die. I thought the great Sasuke was dead because the whole ring explodes and Onita jumps on the ref to protect the ref. Like it's like a movie. And I really thought, I'm like, this guy's dead at the end of the match, and the ref, and Onita's pouring the water on the ref, and he's calling out, and he's on his knees crying. And I think that just one of those matches, along with any of the Foley Terry Funk Japan matches, or then ECW, like next level Sabu versus Sandman, and it's just Sandman being completely, you can tell he's completely intoxicated in a different world, and these guys are just doing the craziest match. And you and The Rock, all your matches with him, that was definitely big for me.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and get big ups to True Car. These days, news travels lightning fast, which is great if you're a sports fan. Between status updates and breaking news notifications, you can always be up to the minute on every team and every game. And while this is great for sports, it's the opposite when it comes time to buying a car. Go online and you are bombarded with numbers like invoice, list price, dealer price. It's hard to know how to recognize a good price. Not anymore. Introducing True Price from True Car. It is the only price you need to know because it's exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. How do you know if your True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want, so you know how to recognize a good price. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their True Price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, sports fans, we got you covered with two new shows here on Podcast One Sportsnet. First, get yourself behind home plate with Baseball and Chill as Kelly Nash and Scott Braun from the MLB Network cover all the big storylines and trending topics on and off the diamond. Then, suit up for the gridiron with the Big 12 Podcast. Join Chuck Cooperstein each week as he checks in with the Big 12 Commissioner and other guests to go over the best highlights and look ahead to the biggest events in the conference. Listen free to both shows exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOneSports.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love these shows, share them with a friend and leave a rating and review. If you're one of the millions of Americans who suffers from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, relief is finally in sight. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and with daily use. TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. Finally, you'll be able to get a good night's sleep and do all those activities you love and not worry about muscle cramps. TheraWorks Relief is a life-changing product, and best of all, you don't even need a prescription. It only takes minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and it really works. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorksRelief.com.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I was watching a match. You were wrestling one of your arch rivals, the Invisible Man. Long-running feud. I'm bullshitting. How did that match come up? Because I used to do a deal down in WCW where I would wrestle an Invisible Man for TV at Center Stage. And I was only going like a minute and a half. You put in like 15, 20 minutes with this cat. Yeah. So, and the crowd, I'm watching the crowd, and it was like, you know, they really bought in. And you were totally committed and were in the zone. And, you know, the referee did a phenomenal job, and you were kind of almost doing a stand-up routine while you were doing this. Explain to me how and why that happened.
I've actually wrestled the Invisible Man 5 times, so it is quite the rivalry now. I think it started off at this guy. He was running local shows in New Jersey, and he said, you should come in and wrestle. And I said, yeah, I'll wrestle the Invisible Man. I said, when are we going to do it? I think one of my shows canceled, and he was running that night, and I said, hey, can I come wrestle the Invisible Man? And he said, yeah, sure. So I just showed up and on the fly did what I did. And then a couple other promoters wanted to see me versus the Invisible Man. And then I wrestled the Invisible Man in England at Blackpool Tower. It's one of the most famous.
That's where my buddy Steve Regal's from.
Yeah, one of the most famous historic venues in all of England. And I had disgraced it by wrestling the Invisible Man for 30 minutes. It was a whole different ball game when I did it there, because the fans were like, what is going on? By the end of the match, they were having a blast. But I'm actually wrestling the Invisible Man next week for the ICP, the Gathering of the Juggalos. So it continues.
Hey, where is the Gathering of the Juggalos? Because I've been hearing about it for years, and I see some clips every now and then, but I don't know nothing about it. So what is it all about? What does Night of the Juggalos mean? I mean, I'm probably the last one to fucking know. What is it? I mean, I know what it is, but what does it mean? What is a Juggalo?
Juggalo is an ICP fan, and I guess they treat themselves as like a religion to them. And every year they have this 3-day gathering of musical acts and professional wrestling, and just where the Juggalos can just be free for a weekend and do whatever they want in the middle of some kind of bumblefuck town in some woods in Ohio. And they do 3 days of entertainment for the Juggalos. And, they have 3 wrestling shows this year. And, I'm fortunate enough to be, somebody that experiences the Gathering of the Juggalos, because it's legendary ever since I started in the business. So guys like Balls Mahoney and all these guys, they would just rant and rave and how, oh, the Gathering of the Juggalos, best experience in professional wrestling. So I'll see for myself, but that's basically what it is. It's just a 3-day religious, how do you say that?
Experience?
I guess religious experience.
Those are kind of almost like Woodstock from back in the day, or Burning Man out here in Nevada. And it's like, I don't know what they do. They go out there and everybody gets stoned, but it's not like juggling. Everybody just raises hell and has a good time, and there's a lot of wrestling and music and stuff.
I think there's a misconception about juggalos too. I just think people see these people and they think they're some kind of violent gang. And that's why there was like a protest in Washington with the ICP at the Washington Monument. They were doing some kind of juggalo protest. But these people, every juggalo I've met, really peaceful, really nice person. So should be a good time.
So how did they reach out to you and say, hey, man, we want you to wrestle the Invisible Man?
Kevin Gill, he kind of, you know who Kevin Gill is?
Man, I've heard that. Yeah, no, I follow him on Twitter.
He does a podcast and stuff. I don't know what he does for the ICP. He books the wrestling for the Gathering, helps book it. And for years, he's been asking me, hey, come wrestle the Invisible Man at the Gathering, because he was such a fan of the match. But then I got thrown off a building and I had to call off Gathering 2 years ago. And last year, I couldn't do it. So finally, this year, it's going to happen. Probably to get beer bottles thrown at me.
I didn't get a chance to watch the this short documentary called Please Don't Die, Joey Janela. Tell me about this documentary.
It kind of revolves around the roof bump. And we were kind of filming it, or thinking about filming it, when that happened. It just so happened that happened around that same timetable that you can base this documentary around me. So it does pretty well on YouTube. I see a lot of people, a lot of fans when I go to shows. I just watched Please Don't Die, one of my favorites. It's a short 40-minute documentary, basically a lot of what I just told you, and it built to a match with a Sabu, who's one of my idols in New York City. But Sabu is not in the condition to wrestle. So that's basically the blow off of that documentary, that Sabu, he needs 2 hips or something. He got them recently, but in this match, it's doesn't go well. But it basically revolves around that and the roof bump with John Zandig. And the guy, Kenny Johnson, he's done documentaries on Johnny Gargano, Sammy Callahan. The list goes on. All guys that have moved on to greener pastures, but he's done one on me, and it does pretty well for him, and it does pretty well for me, because it gets fans that don't know about me. They hear I'm coming to a show in Scotland or Ireland. They go on YouTube, they watch the documentary, and then they have something to talk about when they meet me at intermission or whatnot. So it's a pretty cool deal.
So how was it working with Sabu? It beat up at the time?
It was like my dream match. Like, I always wanted to wrestle Sabu, and I finally got it. And Sabu definitely wasn't in the condition to wrestle. And I know he has to pay his bills and whatnot. This is right before he got the hip replacement, but it was rough. He was limping around. And before the match, it would be like he would call stuff, his spots, and I'd be like, can you do that? You're kind of beat up. And he'd be like, kid, I know what the fuck I'm doing, you know, type situation. All right, we'll see, you know. So that was basically my Sabu experience. I know from there. I think he's probably watched the documentary. He follows me on Twitter now and chimes in on stuff. But I hope to get one more chance to wrestle Sabu and make up for that that match in New York City.
Sign up to do a show. Because who are you working for right now? I know MLW.
PWG.
PWG.
I just want
Combat Zone still around?
I don't work for them anymore. Okay. Game Changer Wrestling. Yeah. And I just won the WWN title for Evolve. Okay. For Gabe.
Okay.
Which is basically now the feeder company for NXT. As it seems, I think Gabe, he has a position with writing NXT now. So I did my first show with them, and in the first night, I won the belt. So that's a pretty big deal for me right now. And working with him, that certainly will help advance my career and clean up some of the loose ends I have still left, you know. PWG, I wrestle for Progress. I did the big tournament this year. Beyond Wrestling, top independent in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New England. I wrestle for AIW, AAW in Chicago. It's just every major independent promotion in the United States I've wrestled for in the last year.
Okay, with that being said, you sign on to work one of these promotions. I mean, what do they expect out of Joey Janela? I mean, they're not going to get a 15-minute headlock series.
They could if they book me against Zack Sabre Jr., which I wrestled him hold for hold for 30 minutes. 30 minutes, we went hold for hold.
Really?
On the fly.
Is that on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
I gotta check it out. I'm a big fan of that guy. He's a hell of a damn worker.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. And basically,
you went toe to toe with him.
Yeah, 30 minutes. 30 minute time limit draw.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Oh, it was great. So people.
So you don't need to do the daredevil stuff.
Oh no, I don't.
You enjoy just straight up wrestling as well.
Oh yeah, I love wrestling. Okay. I'm not the best technically sound wrestler.
Well, neither was I.
I can go toe-for-toe with Zack Sabre Jr. And it looks like I semi-know what I'm doing for 30 minutes. My big thing is making the guys I wrestle look good as best, you know, as I can. And just adapt to their styles. The reason I do the hardcore stuff is because I love it. I can wrestle Matt Riddle for an hour. And we can have a great match without going outside the ring once. I feel like that's just me and all my travels and all the seminars I've done and in the last 2 years, all of the guys I've wrestled, it's everyone has such a diverse style now that I pick a little bit from everyone I wrestle. Sometimes I like to get crazy. Sometimes I like to keep it in the ring and have a good match. Or sometimes I'd like to do a comedy match with the Invisible Man. Or it's just adapting to my opponents and what their style is and making the best out of every situation. And, I feel like that's really what helped me because someone sees the Zandig bump and they say, oh, he's a garbage wrestler. And then they go on YouTube and they watch a match with me and Matt Riddle or me and Zack Sabre Jr. Like, wow, this guy actually can work. He actually knows what he's doing. And that's how I acquired a lot of my fan base, a lot of doubters. And then they come up to me during intermission like, oh, man, I used to hate you, but he's buying two of my T-shirts now, and it's just the independence and professional wrestling, the Wild West.
How do you explain? How do you feel when someone says, "Man, I used to hate you. Now all of a sudden, I like you."
It's just thank you. Yeah. You're putting money in my pocket. I'm big. I'm on Twitter all the time. My girlfriend hates it. I'm on my phone, out to eat, everything. So now I have to lock my phone in the car when we go out. But I'm a Twitter addict. That's what I'm addicted to, social media. It's just looking my name up and seeing what people are writing about me. And if some fans write something putting me down, even though some people say their opinions don't matter. No, their opinions do matter. They're paying money to see me wrestle. Change that up a little bit or change this, change that. I take a little bit from everyone and just to better myself. I feel like Twitter didn't exist, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now sitting with you.
You've made a lot of fans, some of your critics, you haven't quite won over yet. Jim Cornette doesn't seem to be too impressed with some of your antics. Oh. And in the match of you versus the Invisible Man, you said, "This is for you, Jim Cornette," and you go into a series. He's been outspoken about some of your bumps. How do you feel about that?
I don't think I'm a target for him. He just, if my name comes up, there's always people on Twitter that send him, if I do something crazy, they'll send him the clips. Oh, we're going to send it to Cornette, rile him up. Someone will hit me up and be like, "Oh, Cornette's talking about any of your podcasts. This goddamn Janela idiot again. This goddamn barnyard wrestler. But it's the same thing for guys like Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. He shits on them too. It's just, I don't know. He just does it, you know, he does it to boost his audience. And that's what his audience likes. They like to hear Jim Cornette go off on professional wrestling. And that's what that's why they listen to his show. So yeah. I don't really hate the guy. And if I seen him, I'd shake his hand and joke around with him if he wanted to, unless he called me some barnyard garbage wrestler. But yeah, it's just, that's what he likes to do. And that's what his fans want him. They want to hear him bash current professional wrestling. So I can't blame him for that. That's how he makes his money these days.
What's your pre-match preparation? Like for me going out, shall never forget, we was working at the Houston Summit before they changed it to the new building, and Joel Osteen is now preaching out of the Houston Summit. And we were backstage clowning around as me, Triple H. I think Nick was there. China was there. And I just told a joke. We were all laughing our asses off. And I was main event that night with Mick on top. And I should have caught a staph infection after that. And then 4 days later, me and Kane were working on the first blood match after that Hell in a Cell. But anyway, so we were just laughing and joking before we went out there. And all of a sudden, crash, the music goes. And so I got to make my way in the ring. And so all of a sudden, I pour water on top of my head because I'm real ashy. I stayed tan back in the day, but I don't use baby oil because it's just too slippery.
Yeah.
So I'm pouring water on, and all of a sudden, you know, when you're on that hard floor, and you get your wrestling boots on, man, I just zip, bam, I busted my fucking ass. I'm like, damn it. I got up, you know, brushed myself. Of course, this is back behind the stage. So anyway, I went out there, and I was kind of laughing my ass off as I went out there. And of course, me and Mick went out there and ripped it up. And then, you know, like someone was telling me, they were watching backstage one time, and Jake Snake Roberts is one of my all-time favorites. Very economic in the ring, very efficient, but always telling the story, always going for that short arm clothesline into a DDT. And there was Jake over there, the snake's in a bag on a trash can or on a crate, and Jake's over there smoking a cigarette. They hit his music. He drops a cigarette, squashes it with his foot, and waves his arms like this a few times, and he goes to the ring. And you see a lot of guys out there, you know, putting on the rubber bands, you know, getting their biceps all pumped up. What is your way to get ready for the ring, whether you're going to work scientific, Zack Sabre, or, you know, Zandig style?
I used to be all about the bands and doing a couple push-ups, a couple of jumping jacks. I was in better shape when I was younger. Almost 30.
Keep going.
30 now. But now, to be honest, it's quite similar to that Jake the Snake. I'm a smoker. That's my vice. I quit a couple times, but it always comes back to haunt me, the cigarettes. You have a few cigarettes, call the match. Have a cigarette, call the match. Have a cigarette, call the match. Probably get on my stomach, do a little cobra stretch. All right, let's go. We're good to go. That's seriously usually my pre-match meditation. Smoking a cigarette, a little stretch, and we're good to go.
A couple cigarettes, a cobra stretch, and off to the ring. I was reading your ESPN interview, and you said, yeah, most of the guys are doing DDP yoga, CrossFit. What is with the smoking? I used smokeless tobacco for 25, 30 years. I finally said, dude, there ain't no future to this. So I gave it up. When did you start smoking?
Probably when I was 16.
But does it impede your performance at all as far as your lungs, your wind?
No, I quit for a year smoking like a couple years ago. And I perform the same way that I do when I smoke. I think it's all about just pacing yourself, knowing your pacing. I hardly get blown up unless someone completely calls the match to me, and then I have to follow them. Then I'm screwed. The fans won't know that I'm blown up, but I'll know I'm
right
in a different world. But yeah, I'm usually good. I usually, after the match, I'm hock up a little phlegm into the garbage can and drink a little water. I'll be good to go. But during the match, I think it's just... Also, I'm fortunate enough to wrestle in front of all these hot indie crowds and just the adrenaline and, you know, the crowds are always hot and, you know, it's not really, they're never really sitting on their hands. So I'm just fortunate position.
Might want to think about that one. Them cigarettes.
Yeah.
Bad deal.
Yeah, I'm going to quit again and maybe switch to vaping, but.
I just quit drinking 2 days ago and I was drinking about a glass of wine last night. So anyways, I know the road you're going down. My story was back in the day when I first started in Dallas, Texas. You know, I've been in the wrestling school for 5 months. Heels coming in, they work, you know, Dallas Sportatorium Friday night and then TV taping again Saturday morning. And so the heels coming in, they beat the shit out of me with weightlifting belts, kendo sticks, and they were laying their shit in. I mean, I was like the white meat baby face who was the drizzling shits, but I was a good looking kid. So they beat that shit out of me. All of a sudden, you know, I go down to USWA in Tennessee. Jerry Jarrett had bought the territory from Fritz Von Erich, and it was more Tennessee-based. And so we're running the same towns over and over again. You probably know the list of towns. Man, when you're the green and you're the shits, you can tell me how it was for you. But I just got finished playing football at North Texas State, and I figured I had a little bit of a body. I wasn't a great body, but I had more of a body than I did anything else because I wasn't worth the shit in the ring. Didn't know, you know, no psychology, so I was addressing shits. So, man, to go out there, I had long blonde hair at the time, so I'd do some push-ups, you know, put a little baby oil on this back in the day, because I didn't have nothing else, so I just needed to look decent. And then, after I got on the road, and I was making, you know, either $15 or $20, you know, a night, that was my payday, that was top. And that was driving 200 miles there, 200 miles back, and I couldn't even afford a hamburger on the road. And so I was trying to get a pump while I went out there because you want to make some type of impression on your entrance, right? Well, shit, I couldn't impress them with my work, so I'm trying to impress them with a little bit of my physique. And after about, I don't know, about 2 weeks of starving, I said, oh, push-ups. I was too tired to do any push-ups. I didn't stretch. I didn't do shit. I poured some water on my ass, and I went out to the ring and got my ass kicked. But, yeah, those formative years, it takes a little bit of while to get going. Without any training, and you go on to all the seminars you went to, but basically you were on-the-job training, how long did it take for you to kind of start, you know, grasping what the business was? Because as big of a fan of as you are of the death matches and the real violent stuff, dude, there's storytelling storytelling aspects to any kind of match you get into. So just as far as before you got to that level, how fast did you absorb or pick up the business?
It was long. I was a slow build guy. Because, you know, also, you know, when I was younger, you know, I had a bad attitude, a lot of people say. And also because I was untrained, you know. It wasn't the way to get in the business, you know. And I wish I did pay money to go to a wrestling school. But I'd say around 2013, I started working for a company in New Jersey, PWS. They were big for a minute. They were drawing crowds 2,000 every show. They stuck me in this gimmick based on the pro wrestling game from the 80s. I was Starman. So I wore the pink jumpsuit. I had a star on my face. And then they would put me in the ring with guys like Samurai Del Sol, Kalisto, in WWE now, AR Fox, Rich Swann. All these guys were the heavy hitters of the indies back then. And they were doing Dragon Gate tours in Japan, and they were wrestling for PWG and all these places. And when I started feeling like I can hang with these guys, I started to think, well, I do have something going with, you know, I could hang with these guys that they say are the best independent professional wrestlers in the world. And that's when I started to feel like I really grasped it. But still, at that time, my attitude was pretty shot. I didn't have a good reputation. I feel like I really grasped it when I met Drew Gulak and I started doing those Wednesday student shows for free. This is less than 4 years ago. I did them for about 2 years, 4 years ago. So just him working with me and just telling me, wrestling one of his students for 20 minutes and then him telling me what I did wrong, that's when I really grasped it. And it was just from there I started. The first big promotion I wrestled for was Combat Zone Wrestling. And just from there it just kind of blossomed. And we got more emails, more direct messages to get booked. And I feel like, especially in the last 2 years, this is when I really grasped it, because I feel like there's no way to really not grasp it when you're traveling and wrestling 3-4 times a week. So I feel like still it's on the job training for me now. It's just, you know, sharpening everything up so I can get to that next level. And I'm just fortunate enough, you know, to work with Gabe now, and he put the belt on me, and, you know, it's like, this is a WWE feeder company. You know, and people were saying 2 years ago that Joey Janela, garbage backyard wrestler, and now I have the championship, and now I feel like it's that next step of learning to sharpen me up and crisp me up before I somehow get an opportunity on a higher platform.
What was the story about when you first got into business? You weren't well received in the locker room. What was it with the attitude or whatever was going on? And I guess you got a couple of fights or got your ass kicked a couple of times. But what was that all about? I mean, you didn't know etiquette or protocol, or were you just was this still coming from a tough time from when you was a kid?
Yeah, I didn't know etiquette at all. And also, I was the same person I was outside of wrestling in high school. I just don't respect authority and, just kind of walk to the beat of my own drum. So it was kind of like, who's this young kid coming in the business? He has no training. He can't really get it done in the ring, but he's running his mouth in the locker room. And if someone ran their mouth to me, I'd say something back to them, and then I'd end up getting punched in the face. It's just the nature of the beast. And I was small at that time, 100, maybe 120 pounds. People didn't care, you know. Over the years, I got into some fights. I haven't been in a fight in probably like 5 years now, but back in the day, it was a common occurrence, and showed up every week after that and just kept on doing my thing. So now the same guys that punched me in the face back in the day are messaging me on Facebook congratulating me on my recent success and my travels. So it worked out in the end.
What's been the high point of your career? From maybe the Zandig match got you noticed, but I mean, just as from a personal standpoint of where you figured, like, hey man, this was either a badass performance or hey man, this really propelled me.
There's probably two. Probably my first show, Spring Break 1. I wrestled Marty Jannetty in a match, and it turned out it was a really really good match. And Marty basically has no good working ankles. So to get a match out of Marty, like I did on that show, and plus that night was so big for me because it was my own show and the house was packed. It felt like an old school ECW pay-per-view. And it just felt like at that moment, everything just worked out for me. Also, PWG Battle Los Angeles last year, one of the wrestlers got hurt. He broke his ankle. One of the Progress wrestlers from England broke his ankle, couldn't obligate to the booking. So I got a call to fill his spot, and it was like a do or die spot right there, and I've been there ever since. I feel like that was kind of like my breakout performance. It was really something else. Like PWG Battle Los Angeles is something wrestling fans talk about every year. It's probably the biggest indie tournament in the world and one of the biggest independent wrestling shows in the world. And just to have a show-stealing performance, and Meltzer rated it like 4.5 stars. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, this is definitely not a 4.5 star match. I'm like, Undertaker Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania, what was that? 4.75 stars? That wasn't even a 5-star match. There's no way mine was a 4.25 star match. But just like to get to that point, like, and then people are like, wow, look at this kid go, you know, Meltzer rated him this, we got to watch this match, you know, and I feel like it was just like a breakout performance, like a musical act has on like an award show that sets them to the next level. I feel like busted my ass at that in that match at PWG.
Cutting promos or filming some of the vignettes that you filmed, you're never at a loss for words and you seem really comfortable just being who you are. How long did it take you to develop that?
Oh, it took a while. What I would do is just basically just cut promos to my phone. But it wouldn't be one promo and I got it. It'd be 40 videos in a row for just random shows I was doing around the area. And then eventually I would get it. And I felt like one day it just connected and I can just go now. It's natural and it's me. I'm not portraying somebody else, and I'm not using a fake, phony voice. I myself, during my promos, that's who I am. That's who you speak with outside the ring, and that's why I think fans connect to me so much, because I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm not in great shape. I'm just like them. Grew up big wrestling fan and living my dream, and, I don't walk on eggshells, and I like to have a good time just like anyone else. And I think that's why fans connect to me so much. And with my promos, you know, what you see is what you get, you know. know, some are a little outlandish and ridiculous, but, you know, it took a while just to get comfortable enough to, you know, just in one shot do a promo. But now there's still times that it takes, if it's not a live take, doing five. Well, can we do that again? Can we do that again? And, yeah, MLW, that's basically the first kind of TV product I kind of started wrestling for. And they have Bruce Pritchard there, and they have Bruce handle all my promos and vignettes. So that's been a wonderful experience in itself. You know, he's the god of producing. And
what do you like about Bruce?
Just helping me, you know, helping me get to that next level and shortening things up. And it's just the way, if I'm cutting a promo, he goes, no, cut this, and say it again. And it's just, he's done it all. And it's just, I'm very fortunate to have someone like that. You know, the court always sticks in with me. I don't know why. I don't know, but it's, he's a good guy too. I got to know him over the last few months, and he's a fun dude.
Now, like you mentioned, you know, maybe you were somewhat of a Stone Cold fan back in the day. Well, back in the day, man, I was back, you know, backstage, and Bruce Pritchard was my guy. And, you know, he grew up in Houston, Texas. You know, they used to work for Paul Bosch. I don't know if you're familiar with Houston wrestling, but anyway, that's what I grew up watching. And him and Tom Pritchard, who I used to ride up and down the roads with in Tennessee and who gave me a lot of my psychology. I didn't know Tom was, you know, Bruce's brother when he was doing Brother Love. So anyway, all these years later, you know, I'm Stone Cold, and there I'm back there working with Bruce. And, you know, Bruce was one of those guys, I was waiting to see how you described him, but he's always a guy that he's got a million ideas, and he'll push you. Whether he needs to push you out further or reel you back in, he's like an open channel.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to go for it. And he has great advice, whether it's shortening something up or, hey, what about this? And that I just like the fact with Bruce, there's like a never ending possibility of things that, you know, he want everybody in the back wants you to succeed, but he just feels like he's such a, you can feel his passion and enthusiasm for wrestling. I did back in the day, and so I think that's what you're feeling. And he just loves the business so much, but he helped me shit a million times way back in the day.
I wish I could.
Went for Bruce. I, you know, I'm sure I would have still had his success, but Bruce certainly helped me with a lot of my success.
Wish I could work with him every weekend. Yeah, it's just been a great opportunity, you know, just working with him. And they fly us in a day early to do vignettes and spots and all this stuff. And, you know, Bruce is there, you know, to make sure, you know, we hit our cues and, you know, we tighten things up. And it's definitely going to help me in the future. And it's definitely, I'm going to take a lot from him and bring it with me. When it comes to backstage, I've never really worked for a TV company. I'm an independent guy, so most of the vignettes and stuff I do myself. So I've never had someone really direct me and tell me what to do and how to make things the best they could be.
Did you say you went to a seminar with Dusty Rhodes?
It was like a giant camp in North Carolina. Tom Pritchard was there.
Do you know Tom?
Not personally.
Okay, good dude. He's very smart.
Lance, I'd done two seminars and camps with him. I don't know him personally. I'm sure if he saw me, he wouldn't know who I was because he's doing camps and seminars every weekend. Tom was there. Lance Storm was there. Nigel McGuinness. Dusty Rhodes was there for a day. And it was just like they would just come in and do a little speech and watch a couple matches and give your critiques. It was a Mid-Atlantic. I don't know if you know about that. It doesn't happen anymore. Mid-Atlantic North Carolina camp.
Yeah.
In North Carolina. It was Pritchard, Lance Storm, Nigel, Gerald Briscoe. I'm trying to think, maybe one other person. But those guys, they have so many friends just every day. Someone would come in, Dusty would come in, or a lot of just, it's a convention. So they're all there. So it's just, I didn't really, you know, talk to Dusty that much, but, you know, he cut a little speech for us and, you know, you take everything from everyone, you know, you meet.
You ever go back and watch any of the old Dusty promos?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, his career happened before you were really around, going back to the mid-80s. But the guy was just super charismatic, a great showman, and a guy who felt the business. That dude was awesome. Did you get a chance to talk with Briscoe?
Yeah, I had done three camps with Briscoe. And
Briscoe's crazy. That's super cat. Hopefully you get along with him.
You got to work the holds. That's his thing, because we would go to all the camps because he works with WWE still. So from the camps, he did pick guys to – He got a guy in a Cruiserweight Classic and, you know, would get guys spot work with the WWE. And we went to many camps, me and my buddy Rhett Titus, who wrestles for Ring of Honor, and a few others. We went to all the Gerald Briscoe camps, and we'd always wait for it. Like, it's coming. It's coming. You got to work the hold. You know how Randy Orton just slithers in and just works the hold every time. So that was...
pretty good, Jerry Briscoe.
Yeah. It's just whenever I see my friend Rhett, you know, we don't see each other because he's on the road with Ring of Honor and stuff, and I'm doing my own thing. Whenever we see each other, it always comes up, work the holds, because it's a famous Gerald Briscoe seminar.
We used to go overseas, whether it be South Africa or the time was in Kuwait, maybe sometimes when it was in London, Germany, but a lot of times Briscoe would be out there. If I was working with Triple H or whoever, you know, he'd be within the barricade because he's one of the agents. And I'd be calling Matt, hey, man, let's go get Briscoe. So, you know, we'd go out there and start fighting. Of course, we'd glom Briscoe, and he would happily get tangled up in the mess. And then one time, we shanghaied him. We were trampling on him. And we stood up, and he hooked me in a chicken wing suplex. I was thinking, no, man, we're in Kuwait. Kuwait had bought 5 shows. There wasn't hardly nobody in this big-ass arena. And so there's a lot of guy going on. And so Briscoe, he's got my arms bent behind him. I guess I'm, you know, bent over. He's got me in a chicken wing position. So I said, shit, I guess I'm going to help him go up. And so, you know, I come up, and he chicken wing suplexes me. And, of course, I sell the shit out of it, but here's the dude in the suit. Of course, you know, the people in Kuwait probably don't know that that's Jerry Briscoe from Stillwater, Oklahoma, or he's from a little bitty town, and he went to Oklahoma State. One of the toughest shooters in the history of the business, and he's over suplexing the hottest guy in the territory. It was phenomenal. Briscoe, you're the best. What's next for Joey Janela?
I don't know. I have a lot of options right now. Just trying to get to that next level. My main goal is WWE. That's where I want to be. And I'll do anything to sharpen myself up for that opportunity to get a tryout or whatever. But just doing what I'm doing right now. Maybe in a couple months, raise my price a little bit, come out with some more merch, make a little bit more money. And right now, if this is all where my career goes, I'm happy with it. I lived my dream. I've flown over the world in the last 2 years on someone else's dime. Starting in this business as an untrained guy and learning on the road, and I feel like that's what humbled me the most in wrestling. But just you know, rolling with the punches, putting out more of my own shows with GCW, Game Changer Wrestling. Always new month, coming out with a new vignette with my guy Giancarlo Dinamo. Just a phenomenal mind. Hopefully one day I get an opportunity, you know, sign a contract somewhere, make a steady paycheck. I won't have to worry about promoters or how much money I make on merch that weekend. Just sign a contract, getting a steady paycheck, just staying alive.
No, man, staying alive is the name of the game. How'd you hook up with this cat to make some of the vignettes you've done? Because you guys put a lot of hard work and some quality camera work and editing, and the performances are off the charts. So, I mean, the production values are very high. Was that your idea to say, hey, man, I need to start doing this to, you know, further myself down the road? Or how did this partnership happen, or what was the impetus behind doing these things?
I just met him on Facebook, the Facebook group. He was just putting out phenomenal stuff as a fan. And I was like, hey, I work for this company, JCW, which is now GCW at the time. And I said, come and film some stuff with me and some of the guys there. And he said, sure. And just from there, he has connections. We filmed our last promo with a $30,000 movie camera that they filmed Game of Thrones with. You know, that's the same camera they filmed some of the scenes in Game of Thrones. So to have those connections, and he's just so smart. It's like, okay, let's film this. We'll take 5 hours to film it. Okay, when is it going to be ready? 2 weeks. Give me 2 weeks. On that Monday, 3 days later, it'll be ready. You just, how did you get this done? Oh, I just worked all night one night. And that's it. And he's getting a lot of eyes from a lot of higher-ups in wrestling, you know, that want to offer him something else, because there's nobody in any major wrestling promotion that is an independent contractor like him and just putting out quality after quality. He never had. Now on social media, it's like an event. Okay, John Carlo, he's coming out with a new vignette tonight for whatever it is. And everyone, you know, everyone's going to mark their timer. And all right, it's coming out at 8:30 during Raw tonight. They're all going to go on Twitter and they're going to watch that and they're all going to talk about it. And it's going to be the highlight of conversation that night on social media. So we're doing something right. And, you know, that guy is really, he's helped my career. I don't know if I'd even be here right now if it wasn't for him, for sure, because we've worked together. We've done so much stuff. It's just, and he's guided me in the right direction. He's one of the minds behind Spring Break as well. He's one of the guys that came up with the concept of that show. And he does all the production, all the vignettes, all the promos for it. He's just really amazing. And if he plays his cards right and gets in WWE and they let him, they don't tame him and they let him kind of do his own thing that he's doing right now, we can be talking about in 20 years. A lot of people will be talking about how great his career turned out.
Well, where can people find your merch? And once again, where can they find you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever?
My merch, I have a Pro Wrestling Tee store. I don't know why. I'm lazy. I have ADD. I don't really update it. So people still buy the shirts off there, but I like to sell my shirts at shows. You can find me at your local indie show. I'm sure I'll be in your city somewhere.
And we wanted to promote that show you got coming up.
Oh, Lost in New York. It's going to be August 17th. It's going to be at the Melrose Club in Queens, New York, same weekend as SummerSlam. We're running Friday night, 8 o'clock. We haven't even announced half the card yet. Me versus Hakushi, PCO, Pierre, Carl Ouellet. He's having a hell of a career. I don't know if you know about this. He's the top indie guy right now in the United States.
Really?
He's huge. He's 50 years old now. He is the most talked about guy right now.
How did
PCO.
That happen? I mean that with respect. I'm on the outside. I don't follow shit. So
what happened was this: that he did a show in Chicago, and I just so happened to be there, and I was getting the card ready for Spring Break 2, and I seen his performance there. I'm like, what? This guy is, he's doing Frankensteiners, moonsaults off the top to the outside. He's 50 years old, huge still. And I said, yeah, you got to do this show, Spring Break 2. It's gonna be big. And then a couple guys said, yeah, you should do his show. So I booked him versus Walter. Do you know who Walter is? He's a big independent wrestler right now. He's from Austria. He's the PWG champion. I put them one-on-one at the show, and they stole WrestleMania weekend. The most talked about match out of anything that whole weekend besides Rousey and Angle versus Triple H and Stephanie. People talked about that match, of course, because it's on that stage. My show, for PCO and Walter to have that much buzz generated from that match, it just skyrocketed him. He's booked 3 times a weekend now. He's traveling all the major promotions. He's booked at PWG Battle Los Angeles. He was the first guy announced. It got over 5,000 likes on Twitter and 2,000 retweets. And this guy's 50 years old. And I don't know what happened in the 90s, something with Nash and not trying to job to him in Montreal, but he's having a career resurgence. He does like a Frankenstein gimmick now that he's Frankenstein. He does these promos where he has a personal trainer now who's a former famous strongman from Montreal, and he has him do things like he rips a deck of cards in half or he rips a tennis ball with his mouth. They electrocute him, and then he like lifts like 500. Like, he does these videos on Twitter, and it just, they catch on, and he's booked everywhere right now, and he is he's the most talked about independent professional wrestler in the United States right now.
Man, that's very interesting. I got to do some research on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, they hear that he's on a comeback and they're like, wait, what? And they go online and they can't believe it because he does moonsaults. I wrestled him twice already in the last couple months, but he does moonsaults to the outside, Frankensteiners off the top. 50 years old, this guy's huge.
What kind of matches you guys having? Good ones?
Oh, yeah. We had a couple matches in the last couple months, but it's not just me. He hasn't had a bad match with anyone. Every city he goes, he has this match that he just tears it up. And then you see people on social media just going wild. Yeah, he's just having the most ridiculous career resurgence I've ever seen in professional wrestling. And I think it's just 2018. And it also has a lot to do with a lot of WWE taking a lot of the indie guys. They are, you know, they're taking guys at a rapid pace, and it's leaving a lot of guys room to step up and step into spots. And PCO, Pierre Carl, I don't know how you pronounce it, Ouellet or Ouellet, he just filled a spot and he's been running with it. He's just in phenomenal shape. He's huge and he's 50 years old, and you got to see this. You gotta see it.
But it's always good to hear guys come back and either reinvent themselves or whatever, because he's not doing what he was doing.
I heard like he's gotten contract offers already, not from WWE yet, but other people. But he wants one last WWE room. But you can hire him in WWE, make him Kevin Owens' uncle or something. Like he's that entertaining of a character. He's really amazing. He's the same guy he was in the 90s. He was doing the Mountie gimmick,
right,
coming out. He was doing that, but now he kind of shifted in the last 3 weeks. He's doing a Frankenstein gimmick, where his tagline is "I'm not a human no more." And he comes out with these videos where this guy, he was in the grave, and the guy dug him out of the grave and pulled him and reinvented him like Frankenstein, and has him do these feats and trying to make him, you know, one of the greatest. Like, this guy's supposed to be, his manager is like supposed to be the devil or something. He sold his soul to the devil. And it's just, it caught on Twitter, and it's the hottest thing right now in independent professional wrestling. And he's booked that PWG, 50 years old, Battle Los Angeles, biggest indie show in the United States.
I'll check it out. Hey, man, it was good talking to you.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
I know you got a lot of years ahead of you. Dude, safe travels and safe landings. All them crazy-ass bumps. And I got a chance to really catch up to you on YouTube and watch a lot of your stuff and your promos and your work. So you're killing it.
I really appreciate you having me on. It's just, it's kind of surreal. I feel like right now my life has come full circle from the day that they could tell my dad to shave his head, telling all my friends, hey, look, my dad is stone cold, a bald head, goatee, and making him put that 316 bumper sticker on his work van. I feel like my life's come full circle.
Oh, shit. Good talking to you, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, Steve Austin Show listeners, this is Wade Keller. You might have heard me on the Steve Austin Show in the past talking about WWE pay-per-views. You can hear me every week, twice a week, on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Just search Wade Keller. I produce two new shows each week. Every Thursday on our flagship show, I'm joined by a co-host from the wrestling journalism field to talk about the hot topics in WWE and elsewhere. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including Cody Rhodes.
This is going to sound odd, but I think it's difficult for any company to fully commit to me because I don't do anything you tell me to do. That's just going to sound ridiculous. Within the confines of what's been discussed, like about a match or overall 2 to 3 matches, but honestly, the only thing I listen to is the time limit, because I know and expect the others on a show that you have time for a match, but wrestling is starting to put back into what it was meant to be. The wrestlers do the wrestling part.
Listen to the full Cody Rhodes interview right now by downloading the show. Search Wade Keller wherever you listen to pro wrestling podcasts.
All right, everybody, give me to go home. Q, it's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Joey Janela, for coming by the crib today and sitting down and shooting a breeze with me. God dang, Joey, be careful, you crazy son of a gun. Be careful. Them damn death matches are a rough road to go down. Be safe out there. Safe landings to you. It was a pleasure talking to you. Hey, I'm going to give you guys something to watch. There's a couple things on YouTube. Now, there's many things. Just type in Joey Janela, but I really enjoyed the Please Don't Die Joey Janela, a short documentary, and I also enjoyed the Zandig versus Joey Janela GCW Zandig's Tournament of Survival from 2016. That's the full match with that big crazy bump off the roof of that building, and that match he had with Leo Rush. Type that in, L-I-O-R-U-S-H. There's some crazy stuff in there, along with some good work as well. Man, again, this style is not for everybody, but this style has put Joey Janela on the map, and we'll see where he goes from here. And once again, Joey, take care of your ass and safe landings. Hey, man, I want to thank all my sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. They're the ones that allow me to do this show twice a week for free. And it's a big shout out to DDP Yoga, Me Undies, True Car, Geico, and TheraWorks. You can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com under the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.